Hello and welcome to our Secular Overeaters podcast series, where you'll hear from speakers who have found recovery from food and other addictions without God. For additional information, go to secularovereaters.org. And now let's get to today's podcast.
Welcome to the Secular Overeaters presentation on Recovery Circles. My name is Laura, and I'm a recovering sneak and binge eater. I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, and my gender pronouns are she, her. This event is sponsored by Secular Overeaters and is not an official OA event. Therefore, attendees and the speaker are free to mention non-OA resources. Theist and patriarchal language are common in 12-step circles, but can alienate many people seeking relief from compulsive eating and food behaviors. Please join us in creating a safe space for atheists, agnostics, and others to learn about secular recovery support options in the 12-step tradition. Please stay muted as Bill leads us in the Serenity Poem.
Secular Serenity Poem. We seek the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, Bill. Let's get into today's topic, recovery circles. Our presenter, Alan, will explain the concept, and then we'll hear from four people who are already in recovery circles. Next, I'll get a chance to practice being in a recovery circle and make connections with others. Now, let's get started. Alan, you're up.
Hi, I'm Alan, a grateful member of OA. So just the background of where this came from, I've been in OA 35 years, can't tell you how many meetings I've been to. And I started to one day look at a meeting and go, wow, you know, meeting's an hour long. The first 10 minutes is all that kind of boilerplate. They read all that stuff on OA and the history and anonymity. Then there's typically like some literature that gets read or a presenter. That's another 15 or 20 minutes. Then it's halftime and there's announcements. Then there's like 20 or 30 minutes left for sharing and maybe four or six people get to share or something like that. And I would go to these meetings with 25 people and 15 people don't get to share, you know, and it just seemed like an inefficient design that maybe made sense when it was created. And so I thought, well, wouldn't it be better if we had a design that allowed everyone to share? People had more time to share. And, you know, in OA, they say like no crosstalk, no feedback. But I come to this fellowship because I want shared experience, strength, and hope. I want to hear your thoughts. If I'm going through a situation, I'm going to, I don't know, Thanksgiving and stressed out what to do. If you've been through Thanksgiving abstinently, tell me your story, you know? And I thought, actually, sometimes, not always, but I want to have the option to get feedback, the option to get advice, guidance, whatever you want to call it, shared experience, you know, like we talk to each other and we reason things out. So it just seemed to me there's got to be a better design for essentially another kind of meeting. And that's where the idea I came up with is a recovery circle. So I picked that title, recovery, because that's what we're all here for, to get better from our problems with food or other things. And it's a circle in that it's not hierarchical. There's not a leader or whatever that, like, you know, like we're all holding hands in a circle. Actually, I don't know if you can see this shirt. So like OA is my higher power. And it's like a bunch of people holding hands in a circle, you know, like we're all arm over arm there to help each other. So the basic idea is a small group of people. There's no boilerplate. You go right into the sharing. Everyone gets to share. You have more time to share. And if you like feedback, you can get feedback or not, right? But it's your choice if you want guidance and feedback. And often people do. And so I think this format's useful besides the more share time. It builds trust. You know, when you have more time and more consistency and you meet regularly, you start to trust each other. And trust, I think, is key to recovery because you can, you know, share the things you need to, that you need the support. And, you know, trust takes time. You get to know each other. You know, the more I've been in groups like for years, you start to know people, you know, like their stories, their games, their issues. Like the more you know somebody, the more you can help them. And you also thus get better feedback. And then you start to care more. You hear the same people for months and years. You really care about them. Like somebody's going through a hard thing, a health thing, a divorce, a job issue. Like you just, like your heart goes out to them. You feel closer and bonded and care about them. And then there's more of a commitment because it's a small group. It's like you really show up. The group's counting on you. It's, you know, so you get this accountability. I was in one for 15 years with six other men, and we became like so close in 15 years, like brothers, you know, just to meet regularly, you know, with a group of people and really share your hearts. You don't get that in the human condition too many other places, you know, maybe in an expensive group therapy or something, but not in a pure thing that's just done to help each other. So it's just incredibly how powerful. So in terms of some of the dynamics of the group, you can select what kind of group culture works best for you. I've been in all men's groups. I've been in co-ed groups. You know, maybe you want to be with your own gender. Maybe you don't. Maybe you want to be with an LGBTQ group, right? You could form that. Maybe people of color. Maybe you're struggling with bulimia. You want to be with other bulimics or anorexics because that's your thing. I've been in groups with people. I lost over 100 pounds. Sometimes it's helpful to talk to people who've struggled with that level of obesity. It's like it's got its own challenges, you know? So it's okay to form a group that has some kind of, you know, membership that's focused a certain way. So today, the key things in forming a group are, I'd say, the number one thing is the decision. I want to form a group. Like it's like just that decision that, you know, I want to form a group. It just takes one person to make the decision. Then you need to go ahead and find the people, right? And you can find the people pretty easily, actually. You can announce it at meetings. You can put it in the chat. You can go to our Facebook group. You can go to, you know, WhatsApp, like any place where there's other OA people or secular overeaters, you can just put out, I'm forming a recovery circle. Who would like to be in it? Or you can ask people, sometimes just calling somebody up and saying, would you like to join a group or our group? People like to respond to invitations, you know? So you kind of just find the people. Once you find the people, you pick your date and time, or you can pick the date and time first. Like you'd say, I want a group Saturdays at 9 a.m., and then find people that work Saturdays at 9 a.m. Your number of people, you know, typically I think 4 to 6 is a good range. Much larger, it just goes too long. Much smaller, it's not really a group. Duration, often I think about 15 minutes a person. So if it's a 4-person group, an hour, 6-person group, 90 minutes. But again, whatever you want. You'll need a platform to do it on. I mean, in theory, if you all lived in a little in the same town and could meet at Starbucks, that'd be great, but that's rarely the case. So, you know, and there's Zoom, there's Facebook, I mean, there's FaceTime, right? Microsoft Teams, right? There's so many video platforms that are free or near free. And then somebody will just sort of need to be the timer, and then you know, need to share contact information. And then in terms of how you know, what you do during the group. You can have a specific focus, like if you wanted to take some secular book and read it together or work on the steps together or do something like that. But this is what I found most useful and honestly what I'd recommend to start is you look at really just answering two questions. The first is, how is my program going today? How is my food and program going today? You just speak to that, right? What's working well? What needs improvement? I mean, we're here to eat more rationally, you know? So where's my food? How's it going? The second is, how's my recovery going overall, right? Like most of us are not here to just eat better, right? There's other issues, relationships, life, jobs, health, you name it, right? And we often use these groups to deal with the rest of our lives. So that's sort of the second question, the broader picture, call it your recovery, your life transformation. And again, what's going well and what could be improved? And, you know, you just divide the time evenly with just those two basic questions, your food and program and your recovery overall. You can have feedback or not. You know, you can just say, I just want to share. I just need to say this aloud to people that I trust and care about me. And that's it. Or you can say, I'd like feedback. And you can focus the feedback. You can just say, I really like feedback on how to handle Thanksgiving, man. Every time I go to Thanksgiving, you know, that turkey gets stripped to the bone. It's just not good. You know, like I'd like some feedback on Thanksgiving. Or you could say anything that comes to mind, you know, that you get feedback on. So, you know, it's just so, a heck of a best way to say it. I've been in a bunch of these groups for a while, and they really so help your recovery. I think it's the essence of peer support. Being with a group of people with the same challenge and getting to know them, they know you, and together you reason things out on how to eat rationally, you know, and support each other. There's no magic to it, you know. Often, how can I say this? I can better see the stuff in you than you can see it, and than I can see it in myself. You know, like my own thinking around food situations. That's why I'm an addict. That's why I have issues. Like, blah blah blah. That looks good. What do I think? How much I can eat? Like, I can be very fuzzy in my own thinking around food. But when I go to you and say, "Here's my plan," You can hear bad thinking very easily because you can just be rational and say, well, what do you mean you're going to have a candy bar only on Tuesdays? You've binged on candy bars your whole life. That's a terrible idea. Or I'm just going to occasionally have pizza, or I'm just going to, you know what I mean? Like, my own thinking is not the best thinking on food. And with that poor thinking comes the poor behavior. So if I share my thinking with you, you can see it because you're not in my addict head at that time. So that's really the power of peer support. We can just have clarity for each other. And then if you combine that with trust and the openness to get feedback, you just start to get a recovery formula that's very powerful, that can be really healing. And then it grows with time. We learn each other's stories. Sometimes in a first meeting, you can do more like a little background. I've been in OA so many years. These are my challenges with food. This is where I'm from. Basic 101. I'm divorced. I've got two kids. Just start to get to know each other as human beings. And then as you get to know each other as human beings, just start to learn each other's challenges with food and support each other. Like, for example, I tend to get fuzzy on vacations, and so the people in my recovery circle will sort of be like, oh, you're going on vacation again. Like, let's talk more, like it's not, you're not going on a restaurant tour of the world. You're just trying to, get not work for a week and be by a lake. It's not like an opportunity to just eat out a lot. So like I now on my vacations mostly shop and bring my own food as much as I can. Because and I get support from the group to, not do that. So like you start to learn people's, irrational or poor styles of behaving around food and can better support each other. So in any case, that's the essence of it. So I will move on to the next thing.
Thank you, Alan. That was a lot of really great information. Now we're going to hear from our four members who are currently in recovery circles. They will share for up to 4 minutes each on their own experiences with their groups. They will cover 1, how their recovery circle started, 2, what they focus on and talk about when they meet, 3, ground rules and boundaries, 4, any tips. We'll start with Christine, then Claire, then Janet, and end with Marv. Christine, you're up first.
Thank you. I'm glad to be able to share today my story, strength, and hope. Hi. So my name is Christine, and I am a compulsive overeater and compulsive eater. I don't necessarily want to label myself, but that's what I go with. Now, someone once said to me, I heard somewhere in one of the rooms, is recovery, is it more important than anything else in your life? Is it what your life depends on? And if I treat my recovery as important as if my life depends on it, that helps. So, how did our recovery group get started? Well, we attended Alan's workshop, which was at 5 o'clock in the morning for me on the Pacific time, which was a real commitment. But I was really saying, is this the most important thing in my life? And so I did it. And there were actually other people that were from the Pacific time zone. So that's where we got started. We had done a food freedom workshop. And we were randomly matched up and it worked out. So we started with 4 people, and one of those people dropped out. And another person joined the workshop later, and she joined our circle as well. So we had 4 people. And I do think it's nice to have sort of a handful, like 4 to 6. I would agree with that. What we focus on? Well, there were 4 questions that we talked about when we were doing the breakout rooms in the Food Freedom Workshop, and that worked for us. So those questions are, where am I at? What do I want to change? What help do I need? And am I willing? And in there, we talk about both what's going well, as well as what do I want to change. So, and that's worked for us. So we've moved our time around, and that's been a sort of a learning process for us as well. So we started out with a couple people on the West Coast, one in Arizona and one in the East Coast. And so it's like, well, do we want to meet early or late? Some of us are still working full time, and so we had to deal with that sort of things. And if somebody had a family event or something else, we were able to, we've formed some sort of boundaries. And so I'll talk about that. So right now we are meeting on Thursdays at 4 o'clock Pacific, which is then 7 o'clock East Coast. And we've moved it around. I was teaching a class that met in the evenings on Thursdays, and I had to be there to set up. So we moved it a little earlier for the 5 weeks that I was teaching that class. And somebody had a commitment, or somebody came in from out of town. So we will have been sort of talking about we move it to another day for that purpose. And that's good. Let me tell you about some of our ground rules and boundaries. So we decided that we wanted to honor our time commitment and sort of start promptly and end promptly. We are a little wiggly on that, but within 5 minutes is kind of where we're at with that. And what we decided to do was just go with those four questions, more or less. And now I'm going to offer you some tips and some of the things that we've learned along the way. Based on another STEP program that I'm in, there's would you like feedback? And what kind of feedback do you want? Supportive or resource feedback? Because we're not going through and saying a poem at the beginning or doing anything like that. So we really try to focus on the recovery. And here's a really great phrase. One time I was talking about how, oh, it's really hard that my partner is keeping snacks, and it's really hard to walk past that. And it's like, so one of the phrases that was really helpful was, would you be willing to? So I practiced with my recovery circle. Would you be willing to, dear partner, keep your snacks in a cupboard so I can't see them? And then what I was willing to do is I moved the fruit bowl so that I had to bypass the fruit bowl to get to the snacks. And that
Jumping
really
right
worked
in.
for me. So that's just one example of how that worked. And so other things that we've done is we recognize, hey, I'm really glad that you were able to do that. And we found that sort of setting an intention, it's like, well, what am I willing to, what do I want to change? Well, and what do I, am I willing? Sometimes I'm not willing. And my recovery circle has helped me to figure out how I could sort of adapt my food plan in one case so that I was having a food plan, but I was the thing I was not willing to do. It's like, let's just focus on today. And so I found that in that case, focusing on my food plan for one day at a time was all that I could do.
Thank you, Christine. Next up is Claire.
Hi, I'm Claire. Okay, so my recovery circle involvement has been a follow along from the food freedom workshops. I had hoped to get one going on my own, but I reached out online after meetings generally, but as I mentioned, I stayed with the first recovery circle with many slips and commit to texting was difficult as a result. My only contact with dry land outside of meetings of SO were the recovery circles. And the ground rules were to share approximately 5 minutes generally with a group of 4 to 5 persons. Oh, I was still slipping, feeling so miserable, and I quit after a few months into the recovery circle. There wasn't any contact between meetings, and the group had formed from the breakout rooms of the workshop. Two, a latecomer joined the group, so I found myself less willing to talk about things like weight and other issues besides overeating. I did leave with a better sense of my role as a person in a recovery circle from that experience. I learned the benefit of meeting outside of meetings separately and how not to throw away all the decades of by rote learning from 12-step recovery. I would suggest to the recovery circle to have possibly 2 meetings a week and to invite others who may not have been part of the food freedom workshop. Also, I would like to now, without a sponsor, do more direct study, not necessarily on 12-step literature, but working with other non-12-step literature with a recovery food focus as part of the circle. The second food freedom workshop I joined after joining Facebook and WhatsApp social media SO groups, I felt less alone this go around, especially as now I was willing to admit I was a chronic relapser and still gaining weight. The food freedom manual I had read and the workshop was held very early hour in the morning on Zoom with breakout rooms again and formed the basis for the recovery circle. There were still four members of the breakout group that became the recovery circle I now participate with once a week. The same people meet weekly. The same people met weekly during the workshop, though I had hoped there would be more rotation. This group is all women, which I feel more comfortable with traditionally, four of us. The talk is mainly lifestyle and progress using the tools and some on weight, though I have had anorexia and bulimia historically. This is okay. There are no guidelines generally to the group except to wait until a person ends their share. The group doesn't have hard and fast rules. One member is very responsible. We get updates on times if consideration for other schedules is required. It's the same protocol for sharing as other circles. Share individually, usually 5 minutes, then feedback following each share. This group is set up to ask questions presented in the Food Freedom Workshop, which are, where am I at? What do I want to change? What help do I need? And am I willing to do it? I try to share as to what my goals are, what I've accomplished, and what I feel is hindering me so that I can accept feedback. I think the most helpful part of this group is the feedback between the members because of the consistency of weekly meetings. I even followed upon a recommendation by another member to investigate another support group, which I have since joined. I started keeping a plan on an app, food plan, and another member posted her morning plan via text, but someone in the group found it possibly too much texting. I am sorry that did not work out to take it off the shared text, but it did motivate me to find a bookending buddy for using the scales. It would be nice if I had another recovery circle that concentrated on the steps or a theory of recovery. I do attend an SO meeting that tries to work that way, gratefully. We also do talk on struggles with health issues, even weight, if there is a consensus agreement. And I have some sincere relief in the last 2 or 3 weeks, even more so than that, because I've been able to reach out and I have found a night buddy.
Thank you, Claire. Next up is Janet.
Hi, thank you, Laura. Well, participating in recovery circles has been really helpful to me. So, Alan, thank you so much for coming up with this model. I'm in two recovery circles now, and for about a year, I was also in a recovery trio, as we called it. So the first time I heard of the concept was when I participated in a food freedom workshop, which was about almost 2 years ago now. And so as we know, one of the goals was to form recovery circle. And before, at that point in the workshop, we were forming the circles at the end of the workshop. I think that's changed now. But before we came to the end and formed the circles, I had actually asked a different member of the workshop to join me in forming a group. And she had apologized and said she was already in a circle and that it was closed. And I was 68 years old, but I felt like a kid being shut out on the playground. That hurt my feelings. I guess I was more insecure even at my advanced age than I realized. Because after I started meeting in a circle that I did join, that we did form at the end of the workshop, I realized that it's a matter of practicality, not exclusivity, in order for there to be enough time for the people in the group to share and have meaningful interchange. You have to have a limited number of people. So I would just say for anybody who is new to this and is looking for a circle, if you're told that one is closed, or maybe a nicer word would be, I don't know, complete, whatever, just not to take it personally, because it's an opportunity to form your own. So it's important for members of the circle to feel a common energy, I think, and to be equally invested in supporting each other. The time we spend in recovery circles is as much about listening and supporting as it is about sharing. I learn so much from the people I hear in my circles. And it's important to go with the flow and accept fluidity. Sometimes a participant, it just no longer feels like it's right for them. If a member of a group leaves, which has happened in one of our circles, it's also a time for the rest of the group to just assess and see if there's something that might have become a little toxic or uncomfortable or something that needs changing. So, you know, we design these circles with our own parameters to suit the group, and it's important to stop every now and then and just assess how it's going. So My Food Freedom Recovery Circle has three members now. We had four, but one left after a couple months. We meet once a month by WhatsApp. We each share for 10 to 15 minutes, and we do welcome feedback and responses, and we then end with open discussion. Just met with those wonderful people this morning. And we connect really deeply. We laugh, we sometimes cry. We've come to know, as Alan was saying, we've really come to know and trust each other. And it's just a beautiful space that that we've created together. The second group I'm in formed when a peer and I decided to expand our relationship into a recovery circle. And we identified who we thought we might have really good connectivity with. And I extended an invitation to those people. We started with six, and after a while, one left. So we've had a solid 18 months now of the five of us meeting. We meet every 2 weeks for an hour to an hour and a quarter. And we use one of the Zoom slots that Secular Overeaters has made available. So that's another really excellent resource that Secular Overeaters offers. At the beginning, I was suggesting a theme or a question for each meeting, and I would send that out a couple of days beforehand. But after a while, the group decided to just dispense with that topic format, and now we simply share. We have no timers. The group is extremely supportive and trusting and wise. So I would say Recovery Circles have been an excellent tool. They've really provided a haven for me and a lot of stimulation, a lot of thought-provoking conversation. So I'm extremely grateful, and I wish everybody else really well in forming your own circles. Thanks.
Thank you, Janet. Now we'll hear from our final speaker, Marv.
Thank you, Laura. Hello, everyone. I'm Marv, compulsive and emotional eater. And I would say that my recovery circle is an essential part of my abstinence. I luckily was in the very first Food Freedom Workshop in January 22. And my recovery circle has been active since then. We started with five, quickly went down to four members. We've literally had only one person leave and another join in the 2.25 years since. We, as Janet mentioned, our group is closed because we want compatibility and we want trust. And we just want to make sure that that energy and that safety of being able to laugh and cry together doesn't change. So we were very careful about who we reach out to when we needed to add a new member. Our current group meets once a week for between an hour and a quarter. We use WhatsApp simply because it's convenient. And we've changed from our original format. Our original format was a little strict. We started with a reading from either Beyond Belief or Buddhist Recovery. We allowed few minutes for comments from everybody. And then we timed sharing. So we just divided whatever time we had left and then just said, you know, there's four of us, you each get 5 minutes, which was sort of our standard, and went from there. And it was good to start with a format as well as timing, simply because you're getting used to each other and you want everybody to feel like it's an equal opportunity. We also initially, before we start sharing, let people know whether or not we want feedback, and if so, what kind of feedback. Because it's essential to be honest with your communication and straightforward. So if you want emotional support, that's fine. If you just want people to listen, that's fine. Sometimes we don't even know what we want until after we share, which is also okay. Lately, we actually haven't been timing at all. We just do general sharing. We've been together for so long that we really know each other very well, and there's a lot of trust. We also connect during the week. We support each other more than just our meeting once a week. And there's having the timing to start the group was essential, I think. But right now for us, having not timed is also important, because there are weeks when one of us needs a little extra support or more time to share, or is in the middle of a crisis, and that way we can devote more time to that person without them feeling guilty about stealing and taking away from anybody else. So that's one benefit of not timing. But again, we got there after a year being together. So I think it's really what works for everybody that way. I'd say the topics that we talk about can be anything, right? Our recovery circle that I'm in is all men, but we talk about anything that's related to our abstinence, directly or indirectly. It can be a life cycle change. One of our members just moved from East Coast to West Coast, so we have to adapt our time, and we're getting used to that. That's the good thing about knowing people intimately, is that you can be there for each other in times of crisis as well as when things are going well. And having a bunch of people in the group, in our case four, there's always enough somebody there to give support. So I just will say that for me, the recovery circle is just a great way to become intimate with somebody and find the support that you need that you can't always find in a group. Meetings are essential for me in my recovery. But as mentioned early by Alan, there's a limited amount of time and opportunities to share in a meeting. In a small group, you get to share much more intimately and often. And you really do get to know each other very well, particularly if you're meeting on a regular basis, like every week. So again, I highly recommend the recovery circle as a tool to help with your program. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, Marv. Thank you, everyone, for sharing your experiences in your recovery circles. Any questions, anybody?
If you want to use Zoom and you don't have your own Zoom account or your own other account, Secular Overeaters has, well, I'll let Jen say this. She'll say it better than me.
You can apply for a free Zoom room. We have one Zoom account set aside just for recovery circle. Hopefully you can take advantage of that. As Alan said, there's other ways like WhatsApp and things like that.
Lorraine, go ahead.
So we got put into a room with anybody, and we're all trying to find people that make sense with us. So we set up for another time, three of us. But I'm thinking, how do we go about really end up finding the people we want to work with? So the question I have is, when I get to another meeting and there's a chat, and I just say, there's this group of people, there's three of us. This is when we can meet. This is when we decide that we can meet. Is anybody else interested? And get, I don't know. I mean, it's just weird because.
So let me say a couple of things. When we first started doing these things, we sort of had this idea of finding people that were sympathetic and would work well together, and like almost like checking out like dating or something like that. And that's a challenging process. And we came to this fundamental belief that really anyone can help anyone. You know, like I'm in a recovery circle, and there's, you know, like we're very different in so many ways, but we're able to help each other. So the basic premise is really anyone can help anyone. So it's really just finding people with the time and the spot to do it, unless you want to have a special group that's women only or LGBTQ or people of color or something like that. If you want that, then you form that, but not to dishonor that, that's not important for you. But basically, it's just people that want to do it where the time works.
I hear Lorraine, though. I mean, I do understand. It's like, it will work. Like, I can work with anyone. But I do find that it works better when, and it's the only thing is that that's a crapshoot. You know, really, you can't tell. You don't know. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. But I love the idea of a recovery circle. So, you know, this way, at least we get the practice of a recovery circle and then kind of take it from there. I mean, I feel like I just start somewhere because I haven't scratched the surface of recovery circle. So, you know, this may not be like the recovery circle, but I don't know. I guess I'll just like give it my all, you know, just to start off a recovery circle and see where that goes. But I do agree, you know, we are like thrown together and you really don't know.
Sounds good, Penny. Thank you, Alan. It's kind of like I've never experienced anything like this before. It's kind of controlled chaos, but emphasize control. I didn't say it was chaotic. It just was, it's new. And I like Penny's sentiment that we're going to give it give it our all here. Get started.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know for me, often the first step is just to try. And I have to let go of knowing how everything is going to be. For me, because if I waited till I knew how to do everything, I would never do anything. Any other questions?
Yeah.
No question, just a comment. My first sponsor always said to me, what's the worst thing that could happen? It doesn't work out.
It's time to end today's workshop. Thank you everyone for coming today. Again, a special thank you to Alan for sharing your expertise, to our four panelists, and to the rest of the team for your service in putting on this workshop.
Thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to support our efforts, please visit secularovereaters.org and consider making a donation.